At Vanguard, you're more than just an investor. You're an owner. That means your priorities are Vanguard's too. So whether you're planning for retirement or trying to save up for your next big adventure, Vanguard will work alongside you to set personalized investment goals. That's the value of ownership. All investing is subject to risk. Vanguard is owned by its funds, which are owned by Vanguard's fund shareholder clients. Vanguard Marketing Corporation Distributor.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Roto-World Football Show. I am Patrick Daugherty here with Danny Carter and Kyle Dvorak to break down what was a scintillating divisional round. The wild card round was interesting. The divisional round was amazing. And the one game that wasn't close, the Ravens pulling away and beating the Texans 34-10, even that was close at halftime. We had four compelling games with a lot of compelling storylines. So we're going to break down the fallout from those. The fallout for the eliminated teams. Look ahead a little bit to the conference championship round for the four teams that are moving on. I'll have a much longer preview on that later in the week. But first, I just want to say, too, you may notice Denny is here. It's 10:15 Eastern. Denny's awake. I talk about Denny all the time. He says, like, he has a baby's bedtime. Yeah. And he's here. He's trying to beat the allegations that he goes to bed at, like, 8 o'clock.
I'm beating those allegations very strongly right now.
You actually are. You don't even look tired.
I'm not. here's what I did, guys. I slept in this morning. I took two naps in the afternoon, and I drank one pot of coffee at 3:30 p.m.
All right.
I'm ready to go. No, but this idea, and I blame Pat mostly for this.
I am perpetuating this view.
You have perpetuated this to the point where people I don't even know online are shocked when I post something at like 9:35 p.m. Wait, you're still up? Yes, I'm an adult. I put my kids to bed.
The sun is like still out in the mid-Atlantic and Denny's getting, you're up? Tweets?
I'm not like up till 4 or whatever, 4 a.m. thankfully, but I do go to bed at like 11 p.m., which I think is normal.
I've been trying to go to bed at 11. I'm still more. I'm going at 11:30. I take these kids to school, man. This is killing me.
Pat, if I remember correctly, you have to do that for many more years. So I'm saying it's killing you.
So many.
Well, I think at some point, my lovely wife might start doing it again. But it's we have a quote newborn. Actually, she's not a newborn anymore. She's like 11 months old, but. We got a little kid.
Well, I just yawned. I will say I just yawned, and my eyelids are feeling like 12% sleepy.
So Denny is trying to beat the allegations. No one was yawning in Chiefs Bills. Yet another compelling instant classic game between these two big time rivals of the AFC. Although, of course, it's the classic. It's hard to call it a rivalry when the Chiefs keep winning the games that matter. I mean, the Chiefs tried not to win this game really big time. Everything after that fake punt, one of the most tilted decisions I've ever seen in my life from the Bills. Romo and Nancy are trying to explain, well, there's only 10 men on the field, Jim. They have no choice but to fake punt it. And, you know, the most fateful decision, you know, like, I don't know if I still would have done it even when they had 10 men on the field. And they did it, and it was easily stopped. And the game should have been over then. But the Chiefs had other plans. Mecole Hardman had other plans. I don't even know where I'm going with this rant, but it was an amazing game. And the Chiefs could have easily lost it, Denny. But you were talking about before the show, like the Bills' formula was basically to barely win games, to eke them out. And it almost worked here, but you can't eke out a game in the playoffs against Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing is that, you know, we've talked about on the show for, I don't know, a month and a half now. how run heavy the Bills have been. And this results from both Josh Allen's rushing, but also an increased usage of not Dalvin Cook, but James Cook. And we saw that here again. They ran the ball on about 50% of their plays. I don't have the data for like early down rushing or anything, but they've been Falcons-esque in that regard for a while. That continued tonight. 4.7 yards per attempt for Josh Allen. No pass play went over 15 yards, which is amazing. Now, yes, and I know. Well, he hit Stephon Diggs right in the hands from 75 yards. Whatever. Yeah, okay, that worked. And the air yards
What's going on with that guy?
The air yards are going to look beautiful. I'm telling you, those air yards numbers are going to blow your mind on Monday. Okay, this offense, I don't think was constructed to take down a team like Kansas City, and they came awfully close.
So close. Denny, to your point, man, the Bills ran 78 plays in this game.
So many. I don't remember the Chiefs being on the field. I have no recollection.
The Chiefs ran 41 plays, and the Bills ran 78 plays. 39 dropbacks, 0 sacks for Josh Allen. 39 rush attempts, 25 running back rush attempts. By the way, you look at the Bills' box score, DeMar Hamlin had a carry. Just talk about, seriously, like people talked about, you know, the comeback player of the year debate and Joe Flacco down the stretch. DeMar Hamlin went from like the scariest thing any of us have ever seen on a sports field to then having a carry in the divisional round the following season. Of course, it was that fateful fake punt play, but talk about just what a miracle and good to see. But just, I don't. The Bills they weren't playing to win this game, man. And then the one time they did, it was so tilted. So tilted.
Well, I wonder what the decision-making process on that was. Like, was
it might have been a punter. The punter might have gone rogue or has been, you know, taught to go rogue then. I mean, that's kind of
yeah. That's my assumption of how it happens, is that if he can recognize there's a blocking mismatch, which the broadcast pointed out, probably a blocking mismatch if the Chiefs forget to put a 11th player on the field, I'd imagine he is told he's allowed to option into it. But, like, I don't know, maybe don't.
And you guys both referenced, though, the Steph Diggs. It seriously should have been, like, a 70-yard catch. And it wasn't perfect, but I mean, just very, very surprising a player. Stephon Diggs' caliber does not catch that ball. He, since his slump became noticeable in the box scores, we don't know, like, when it really started. It might have started even when he was still posting 100-yard games. So it was week 7 against the Patriots. And the week 7 through this game, he averaged barely 9 yards per catch.
Yeah.
Just what do you think is going on? Is it, you really think it? Can he really just hit the age, like cliff midway through the season? Where I still think it's probably about injury, but I do think sometimes the age cliff, you're fine until you get hurt midseason. It's what happened to Peyton Manning in 2014, where he was still playing at MVP level. He got injured, struggled to end the year, and then it was done the next year. I just don't know what happened to Stephon Diggs. It's one of the most baffling things I've ever seen, and a huge, huge question mark for the Bills headed into the offseason.
And you know, this is not analytics, and nothing in his usage, his type of routes, whatever, his targets has changed significantly. I do see a guy who is not really confident on the field. He just doesn't look as cocky as he usually does.
I mean, he's had some of his worst drops of his career this year.
Yeah.
Like, drops are random. Like, I think the math shows very obviously drops are random. But randomly, he had horrific luck this year, and it is luck that he controls the destiny of.
There wasn't that usual, like, fire from him, you know, when things are going bad or good. I don't know. I don't know what was going on. He seemed I don't know, disconnected, disinterested at times. And this trickled down into on-field stuff where Josh Allen didn't throw it to Diggs, flashing across the middle on what could have been a long gain on that final drive. Second to last drive, I guess. Oh, no, it was the final drive where he threw it to Shakir in the end zone but didn't quite get there, right? And
he got hit. I guess Tony Romo, he got grazed.
And he did. He did get, and that was a touchdown.
Grazed, yeah.
That was going to be a touchdown. The Bills win in that case. That's real tough. But I think usually in years past, even early this year, Josh Allen would have easily checked down to Stephon Diggs flashing across the middle. He didn't even look.
Do you guys think it's chicken or the egg? Where I feel like the Bills found themselves exactly where they started. Where the big time talking point last postseason was, man, they have no plan B, like when Josh Allen hero ball doesn't work. And that was really, really evident in that loss to the Bengals last year. it wasn't quite as evident in this game because it wasn't such a sloppy game. It was a close game, but I what is the team's offensive identity beyond Josh Allen big play down there somewhere? And he delivers it freakishly often. A true freak of nature, Josh Allen. But like, I feel like, so this brings me, I guess, to the coaching. Sean McDermott was a program changer for the Bills. You could argue firing him would just be like scapegoating him. I think they need to try something else because I still cannot articulate what the Bills' offensive identity is. They have to have some more articulate version of their offense other than just like Josh Allen insano mode. And I think someone needs to come in there and try something different, but I don't know if you guys agree or not.
I think I'd try to find some talent beyond like rookie tight end, which is a historically bad bet, and like at best Gabe Davis, which is a terrible bet to be your number two anyways, but at worst he's not healthy, and then Khalil Shakir suffers a horrific concussion, and then you're down to Trent Sherfield, who also had a, I mean, it was not like we talked about with the Diggs one, like these are hard plays to make, but you're in the freaking, like you're trying to get into the AFC championship facing Patrick Mahomes. You have to make those plays, and Sherfield had a very bad drop in the sense of it hit the ground and tumbles. You know, he didn't secure it before it hit the ground. That's a drop. I think before like tearing the whole program down, which like they already started with Ken Dorsey, try and find him someone who isn't a rookie tight end, who they also don't seem to know how to use. Anytime Dawson Knox is active, they can't seem to get Dalton Kincaid going. Is that over middle of the field engine?
It's totally crazy.
That's one crazy aspect. The other crazy aspect is playing Gabe Davis every snap, and he doesn't do anything when he's actually active. And then the plan B at that point becomes like, maybe it's Kincaid, but maybe it's Shakir. Like, take, this is a really deep, like, first round receiver class. Take a shot on a guy this year. And if he turns out to be like a Rashee Rice level player, especially in the fact that like maybe you start using Diggs more as like, use him as an outside deep threat, and you bring someone in like she who can dominate over the middle of the field. I think that's what they're trying to get with Kincaid, but I don't know if they've actually got it.
Or just sign. I mean, Josh Reynolds.
Or sign someone. Yeah.
Sign some like role players who could like do something.
Yeah. Even if it's not like spending a ton of money, which we probably shouldn't do. Like guys, you know, we see this all the time with veteran wide receivers. The ones that make it to the market and get a lot of money probably end up being overpaid. But there are lots of ones that come in on these 2 and 3 year deals who probably could have been like either, I want to say, closer to the high end guys. It's really the high end guys should have been closer to them. In fact. But yeah, try to go 3 or 4 deep. Maybe be like Packers, right? You don't have to have the number one receiver in the league, but if you're like unguardable in that a team has to run 4 corners deep to run with you, maybe that's the plan for the Bills. But I do think the Bills need more pass catching talent, especially with Diggs playing some of his, I'm saying his worst football because his worst is a really high bar, but some of his worst football in his career came this year, and then still not figuring out Kincaid and Gabe Davis is useless. Like, add some weapons. Maybe you add a top end, you know, first round receiver. Maybe you try and run 3 or 4 receivers deep. But I want to see Josh Allen with more receiving talent around him before I say, like, Dable's got to go.
Not Dable's. You mean Sean McDermott.
Or McDermott, yeah.
Dable, he already went, Kyle. I thought you knew ball. No. Denny, shorter version of what Kyle just said, the Bills are favored to win the AFC Championship game if they had simply acquired Adam Thielen last offseason.
Oh my gosh, you're right.
Adam Thielen, the Chiefs would be waltzing to the Super Bowl with Adam Thielen. The Bills would be hosting the AFC Championship game with Adam Thielen.
Adam Thielen had over 100 receptions on the worst offense in the NFL. So
worst offense in modern history.
I mean, yeah, I'm trying not to overstate it.
Yeah, Denny's been getting in trouble with the Bryce Young clan. But Denny, Sean McDermott, should he stay or should he go?
I don't think that he should be fired.
What? Why? What's wrong with you guys?
Like,
you guys are stumping for Mike McCarthy one day, and then you're stumping for Sean McDermott.
What was Sean McDermott's other plan? What was his other plan in this game? Throw more to Trent Sherfield? Like,
no, I mean, Sean McDermott have an identity. Like,
but what's the identity?
That's on the head coach, man. Like,
they
how
don't
many
have
years
the
in row?
Talent to have another identity.
They do they though. Like, how many
who
years
is
in row?
It?
How many years in a row can you have an elite team that has no offensive identity? Like, I just don't.
That's the thing. They are overcoming, like, they are overcoming the fact that their number two receiver is Khalil Shakir.
They're basically falling into the same trap the Panthers did with Cam Newton. Like, he'll be Superman forever. And, like, he can take hits forever. That's just not how it works.
It is.
No, I agree with that, but that's not like, yeah, I totally agree that, like, Josh Allen, do everything, please God, Josh Allen, save us, isn't the right way to play football. like it, over a long sample, it probably doesn't work. But in this season, like, what was the other, like, we saw them. I mean,
I'll say, I thought they had more
at the end of the season, and who cares? Like,
I thought they had a better, I was going to say, so it's kind of split the baby between you two. Because Denny's complaining about their more conservative style. You're saying that, like, they didn't, we're both kind of saying they didn't have an identity. I did think they had a better identity after they fired Kyle's god, Ken Dorsey. Sorry, I had to get that in there. But where I did think they needed to commit a little more to the run, and they did do that. And
I mean, but it killed them in this game. Like, they ran
it
just
and did it, though.
It did. It did.
What would they run like 16 times with James Cook for under four a carry?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
all their biggest misses, though, were in the passing game.
James Cook, guys, James Cook had 18 carries for 60 yards, 3.4 yards per carry. I mean, that there were, and a lot of it was on first down. You might as well just take a knee. Honestly, just take a knee. Don't even do that stuff. That was embarrassing. I think you'll be shocked to know this. They need to load up on receivers, go four wide on every play, and never run the ball with their running back.
I mean, I know it's not as easy pushing a button, but I didn't know what either the Chiefs or the Bills were thinking last offseason and not augmenting their receiver cores.
Yeah.
And like the Bills plan, I thought was especially poor, even though Dalton Kincaid ended up having a fine rookie year, using a first round pick on a 24-year-old tight end when you really, really need a weapon.
And you had just signed Dawson Knox. Like, he legitimately got like 4 years, I think like $50 million or something. It was a ton of money.
So I don't know. The Bills, they're at crossroads season for the Bills yet again. Yeah. Real quick, we talked about this game probably longer than we should. Chiefs got their swagger back, question mark. Yeah, it was starting to look like it against the Dolphins. It looked like they've looked a lot more like the normal Chiefs the past 2 weeks.
They did. Kelce obviously got involved, 5 catches, 75 yards, 2 touchdowns. Only 6 targets, but that, you know, accounts for a 26% target share on a day when Mahomes only throws 23 passes. Okay. So I guess the plan would be just to, you know, hammer Kelce and Rice with targets and then use Pacheco against, soft fronts when teams are playing off, you know, way off line of scrimmage, two high safeties, whatever the case may be. To punish them with Pacheco. I think that's your best bet. I kind of feel like until things change, and maybe things will change big time if Andy Reid calls it quits after this season, which there's been some chatter about that. But it feels like Mahomes's like gaudy stat days are over.
No, they're not. It's just totally, I think really it's just all about, he can do whatever you need. Right now, they don't have any weapons. So whatever. He's become like the best, like, don't turn it over. Take your shots. Like, I think the second they get back like another weapon, it's back to like take your shots.
I hope you're right. I know. I mean, I really hope I'm wrong here. But it feels like, you know, he is content to play underneath and, like you said, do what it takes to win. And, you know, he'll be fine for fantasy. But like, I can't imagine. I have zero interest in him in fantasy going into next year.
That seems very strong.
I mean, they scored, I think, under 20 or fewer points 6 times in the regular season. Half of Mahomes's 20 or fewer points games in his career came just this year. I agree, Pat. Like, how do you expect Mahomes to get home for the 350-yard game when, like, it's just passes doinking off the helmets of MVS and Mecole. But the team also has been relatively disinterested in spending a lot of either draft or money, you know, capital at receiver. It's like day 2 pick on Rashee Rice. Let's go bargain hunting for MVS and Juju, and let's bring back Justin Watson for a prominent role. Like, why? I don't get why they don't just commit to a first round receiver. I mean, maybe the answer is ultimately like, they have not done it yet, and they're going to go to an AFC championship, and they just came from the Super Bowl. So that's the answer. I guess the results are what they are. That's probably
why. I think the plan, too, was they don't have the capital to invest in like a big-time free agent wide receiver. So keep taking a day 2 flyer until one works. And I would say the Rashee Rice flyer looks like it's going to work.
And 100% it's going to work.
He's going to be like a wide receiver 1 next year, probably.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's had one of the better rookie seasons we've seen. I think the one thing that they're still missing, though, is Rice has had one of like the lowest ADOTs for a high volume receiver in the past 5 to 10 years. He is strictly part of the new era Chiefs in which, like you said, Pat, they're incredible at limiting bad plays. They have a great success rate because Mahomes doesn't take sacks, but he also doesn't just throw bad throws to avoid the sack. He's perfect in that sense, but they are missing the big play, and Rice doesn't seem to be giving them that.
Is Pat Mahomes, I don't know why I'm throwing this landmine into the pie. Is Pat Mahomes a more poised quarterback than Tom Brady was? The answer is yes, but can you admit it?
Can I be correct here? I'll say yes. I think when the chips are down, I think Mahomes is more poised. Yeah.
Hey, I've never seen anyone with this guy's poise. He never throws the back-breaking pick.
He doesn't, man. He's so good.
If he does throw the back-breaking pick, it's always the classic is actually a perfect pass. And I've never seen this guy make a mistake. Then oh man. Yeah, in Brady, it was extremely rare, of course. But Mahomes, it literally does not happen.
Man. Yeah, I mean, that's his part of his magic. I think there are so many things, magic about Mahomes. The incredible throws, his, goober receivers drop all the time, but the incredible scrambling, diving throws. But I think the underrated part is the lack of just any mistakes, despite his team putting him in position where he could be making a lot of mistakes, and we would excuse them in the sense of it's a high pressure environment, it's third and long, you got to make a play, I get why he threw the pick, but he just doesn't do that pick. Like you said, he doesn't make the bad play. And where we saw with Jordan Love, which we'll talk about in a minute, Love played a sick second half of the season and played a not a bad football game, but when push came to shove, he did make the back-breakingest play you could.
And speaking of the Mahomes receiver errors, two touches for 1 yard from Mecole Hardman, and might need to be a game day inactive for the AFC Championship game against the Ravens. Everyone, a lot of talk about global pop superstar Taylor Swift. Global American football superstar Jason Kelce going into the crowd and taunting Bills fans was, I thought, interesting fan box behavior.
I would caution against that.
Not me. He knew they weren't stepping.
I mean, it's and Jason Kelce.
Jason Kelce destroyed. He was, so that was interesting. But we digress. We move on.
Vanguard is working hard to balance opportunity and risk for investors in this time of volatile yields. We know financial advisors are working hard to do the same. Visit vanguard.com/fixed income today. Important information. All investing is subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. Bond funds are subject to the risk that an issuer will fail to make payments on time and that bond prices will decline because of rising interest rates or negative perceptions of an issuer's ability to make payments. Vanguard Marketing Corporation, distributor.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
To the Lions, 31-23 over the Bucks. This game was close. It wasn't nearly as compelling as Chiefs Bills. I don't know what kind of label I'd put on this game. The Lions got tested and they responded and won. They didn't look like a team that really deserved to be in the NFC Championship game. But it's a down year in the NFC. We'll just get your thoughts on the Lions. I wouldn't say the Lions have no chance to upset the 49ers. We'll get more into the 49ers. What I saw from the 49ers on Saturday evening was a team that didn't look like it believed in itself. I'm getting deep into boomer vibes based analysis. Man, the 49ers vibes were very bad. The Lions vibes remain pretty good. But neither of you think they really have a chance to upset the 49ers. We'll get into this a lot more later in the week too.
No, I mean, just off the top, I don't think the Lions have any chance to beat the Niners. I'm sorry. I mean,
thankfully this game is not on NBC.
I mean, it's in San Francisco. It's away from
the dome. Yeah, no one ever wins in Santa Clara. I mean,
I'm just saying it's away from the comfy dome. Okay, where Goff excels. Goff is so bad under pressure, and he's going to face pressure a lot here. So it doesn't set up. The matchup is, I think, matchup. On paper, it's real, real bad for the Lions. We'll get into that in a minute. I will say with this Bucks-Lions game, I do think it was a Bucks team that early on let it be known that they were not serious about winning this game.
I know. I totally agree.
You know, Todd Bowles, hyper conservative coach, punts on fourth and inches or fourth and one, on the plus side of the 50, it's a touchback. It's a net of 23, 24 yards, whatever. Like that right there. I was talking to my dad and I said, Dad, well, that's it. That's the ball game. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, the Bucks just said, look, we had a good season. We had a shockingly good season. We won a playoff game and that's good enough for us. We're not here to win. We're not going to win this game. So that was a give up. That was a give up there. At that point, I knew, the Lions are going to win, obviously. And that's unfortunate because I do think the Bucks were equipped, had the offensive firepower to actually win this game if they had wanted to, which they didn't. And it showed later in the game where Baker Mayfield was looking like Mahomes out there.
I know.
Just zipping balls into traffic. Mike Evans coming down with a touchdown there in the fourth quarter. So the Bucks could have probably should have won. It doesn't matter.
Should have feels a bit strong, but
to me it doesn't matter because neither of these teams can compete with the 49ers.
So it sounded like if Bruce Arians had WWE style like gate crashed into the arena, you're saying that they would have won the Bucks. You know, he was pretty aggressive. Yeah, he liked to throw.
Yes. I mean, the best thing that can happen to every time we see a team like lose its kicker to a hamstring pull and they have to go for it on fourth down.
I know, it's true.
Those teams have scored 37 points every time, every single time.
Yeah, we scored more points than we haven't since 1989. And it's like, well, that's because you didn't kick.
That's an extremely, extremely good point. And man, Danny, you had a lot of good launching off points there. The Bucks team, that's like in total rebuild mode, by the way. Like everyone's a free agent. Like half the teams, like Adam Schefter had a tweet, like half the teams like a free agent.
Evans, are you talking about the Texans or the Bucks?
Oh, excuse me, I meant the Bucks. Did I say the Texans?
No, I'm sorry, because I thought that I know the Texans basically have everyone in free agency. I didn't realize that.
Well, the Texans had a lot of guys in one-year deals. It's not anyone like that important, though.
Yeah, Texans have numbers. They have a lot of numbers of guys going. But it's like, oh, Robert Woods, probably Noah Brown, I'd imagine. Dalton Schultz, like the core. Who we love.
Yeah. Remember when they were rebuilding, Nick Caserio was obsessed with 3-year deals for special teamers. And that's kind of
what's going
on with the Texans.
Can't they just slap Mike Evans with the franchise tag?
I kind of doubt they'd do that to a veteran like him.
Really?
I don't know. Like I think will just be re-signed.
I think so.
Well, I mean, what has ever stopped a team from using a franchise tag against a player?
Yeah, I know. I don't know. Yeah, there's no such thing as goodwill in this league.
No. But
I think Baker and Evans will probably both be back.
100%. Baker, I mean, we talked about this with a few teams. Like we talked about with the Dolphins, where two is a free agent and one more year. But like the way the team is set up for both the Dolphins, but in this case for Baker and the Bucks, if they want to continue doing what they're doing, which is fine. Like I don't really fault a team for being like, we can win one playoff game. Let's see if we can get frisky, as opposed to like, let's gamble it all on the 17th overall pick quarterback. Like that guy's probably not good. I don't blame them for taking just another year, run it back with Baker, make some changes in free agency. Like maybe that's not optimal team building strategy over a long horizon, but you made the playoffs and you were like a frisky team in the playoffs. No problem with them bringing him back. Baker benefits greatly from coming back because this is the most successful he's been in his career. And the team, if they want to continue down this road, is most able to do so by bringing Baker back. So I'm 100% convinced he comes back. I don't think there's even a conversation that he doesn't come back.
Well, unless they're not willing to franchise tag him, he might get lured away, I will say.
I don't think someone would offer more than the Bucks would offer, though. And it's in his best interest to come back unless, like, there's not going to be a spot that's better.
Bill Belichick loved our man Bakes in the 2018 draft pre-draft process. And once Bill is finally installed down there in Atlanta, they're interviewing every assistant coach in the NFL at least two times before they hire Bill Belichick. But once Bill accepts that Falcons job, he's coming for our guy Baker.
And we also did have Ian Rapoport saying that he was more saying the franchise tag is on the table, as in like, hey, reminder, here's a thing to think about. I don't think he was saying his sources have that. But I do think that if Baker really considered leaving, they would just tag him, which would make the Evans situation a little bit harder to navigate, though.
It's Baker, Evans, Antoine Winfield, Levante David, Devin White, Chase McLaughlin. These are some of the Bucks free agents.
Yeah, they've got a lot of defensive guys who are coming up.
So there will be a new era, maybe. Oh, not really. Different team in Buffalo. God, I can't talk. Tampa Bay next year. Kyle, do you have anything to say about the Lions? I mean, I feel like the Lions never really sell anybody on the Lions, but they just keep winning. They do win every single week, and they're now in the NFC Championship game.
Yeah, the parts of the Lions versus the 49ers that I think give me some hope that the Lions win, not that I really have much investment in who wins this game, but that give me some hope if I were a Lions fan, mostly come down to what we saw from the 49ers.
Yes.
So, you know, the Lions are a good team, and I think if they catch the 49ers on a bad day, which we did see this weekend, they could probably beat that version of the team. But this, what we saw from the Lions versus the Bucks, it didn't really change my opinion on them much.
It's going to be the classic, comes down to vibes. Kyle Shanahan does everything in his power not to lose playoff games. Dan Campbell's going to be doing everything possible to win the game. And as we know, the 49ers have come the ultimate, must get off to a hot start team.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they might lose to Jordan Love.
We know that Dan Campbell will try to win. He will not just try not to lose. We know that.
So we'll. The 49ers, they struggle with the team that just do. I don't know what to say other than that they don't believe in themselves. Like, that should not have been a close game. Like, it really just should not have.
Are we going to get to that game now? Or?
We will. I mean, it's like, though, like, yeah, whatever. Let's move on.
At Vanguard, you're more than just an investor, you're an owner. That means your priorities are Vanguard's too. So whether you're planning for retirement or trying to save up for your next big adventure, Vanguard will work alongside you to set personalized investment goals. That's the value of ownership. All investing is subject to risk. Vanguard is owned by its funds, which are owned by Vanguard's fund shareholder clients. Vanguard Marketing Corporation Distributor.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters. Both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
49ers, 24. Packers, 21. And, like, I just think, how can the whole operation fall apart when Deebo Samuel gets hurt? Like, whatever. I know you have a game plan. I know he, like, contributes in, like, every package you have. He contributes to change of pace running back, blah, 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 blah. You still, even without Deebo Samuel, have one of, like, the three or four best skill cores in the entire NFL. And to, like, just look lost, and, like, you know, the announcers are talking about, like, I don't know what to do without Deebo. It's all about Deebo. And it's the classic. It's too elaborate of a machine. We always come back to this point with Kyle Shanahan. Like, you have to be more anti-fragile or whatever the crypto people say.
And they're hyper fragile for sure. It was telling to me that the first play of the second half was a handoff to Juwan Jennings.
Oh, yeah, no, that was like the handoff heard around the world.
and that speaks to, you know, what we've talked a lot about it, Pat. I think you've said the system cannot fail, it can only be failed. So the system is a guy gets a handoff in that position. It doesn't matter who. But it does matter who. It does matter because Deebo Samuel is a special player, okay? He's not – Juwan Jennings is not Deebo Samuel. And I know that sounds ridiculous when I say it. It sounds ridiculous when I say those words. But to Kyle Shanahan, this is obviously a novel idea because he actually ran that play not caring that Deebo Samuel was not in the game, okay? So he's got to get out of this mindset that it has to be the system. Just keep the ball in your good player's hands. If Deebo's not available, you hammer at CMC and you force feed George Kittle. That's what you do.
They weren't quite force feeding Kittle. He did have a nice game. They did start to finally force feed Christian McCaffrey. Was your faith shaken in the 49ers, Kyle, or where are you at?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of know this about the team, about how fragile it is, but I'm not sure they have a path to anti-fragility, in that, like, when you say, like, oh, they can't be so complicated that when one piece comes out, everything falls apart, because that's like, oh, if you take all the bells and whistles away, can they still be a good team? you're exposing your quarterback in that scenario, and your quarterback who executes the system very well is not a quarterback who succeeds outside of the system very well. Like it's, you know, the Wizard of Oz, you pull the curtain back and you realize, oh, there's just this guy operating the system. If you take away the curtains, you take away the bells and whistles, you're left with Brock Purdy, who is not bad, but, you know, assume they make the Super Bowl. If they're able to shut down some of the aspects of the 49ers offense, whoever their opponent is, that make them the 49ers offense, you're left with Brock Purdy versus Patrick Mahomes. We know how that's going to go. So I think, you know, as much as we say, as much as like, it'd be great if the team could survive without doing all of the advanced stuff they do, without doing that stuff, they can't. We know they can't. It's not like a, oh, why can't they do it? We know they can't because we know who they are as a team.
Well, they can, though, to Denny's point, they can at least take the Debo plays out of the playbook.
Yeah, they can still smooth some of the edges out. Yeah, yeah.
Like that was just totally, that was a moment of temporary insanity. I thought, like, dude, he's hurt. Like, just you got Christian McCaffrey. Just like, give him the ball. Like,
do it with Brandon Ayuk.
I know. I mean, literally do anything other than what you did, but still, like, I throw a slant to George Kittle. Maybe he's seems like every other one of those is an 80-yard touchdown when you do it. Do anything other than that, and he coaches tilted out of his mind. Kyle Shanahan and the man. Like, live free, man. Like, live free. It's the 21st century.
He is like, trapped. He's trapped in his own head.
He is. He's that. So inside his own. No one can match him in terms of scheme and play calling, and yet he constantly brings himself down to their level by, like, tying one hand behind his back for absolutely
no right. reason. Right. You know, as for Purdy, I, you know, get a lot of.
You guys both sound like you're trying to say he's bad.
So yeah, I get a lot of Niners fans saying. He won, didn't he? And yeah, I mean, yes, he did. He happened to be on the team that won. He did. That's true. He was 5% below his expected completion rate, which is way, way below his season long rate, which led the NFL, of course, because he is a Shanahan quarterback. And honestly, if we're being generous, he threw three shoulda, woulda, coulda picks, maybe four. Okay. Every time he let go of the ball in the second half, because apparently he is unfamiliar with precipitation.
I was going to say, it looked like he had never, quote, touched water
before. I mean, he's from Arizona, so I guess he's actually never seen water coming out of the sky.
He played at Iowa State. And Iowa, you know, after October 24th, you think Cleveland has bad weather. Iowa, after October 24th, has the worst weather of any state in the lower 40.
Well,
I mean, Iowa State's mascot is literally like horrific weather. Like, that's the whole point.
Yeah, that is a very, very good point.
I think Purdy. So Purdy played as poorly probably as he can play. Okay. I'm thinking that it doesn't get worse than that. And as the Niners fans reminded me, they won. Okay. So that's why I think even if Purdy plays like just okay this week against Detroit, they will win easily. If he plays great, they will win by a lot. That's my thinking.
I think too, this we'll talk about this a lot more on third. I kept thinking the Lions defense, like at some point, like when your team is so good, it seems like the rising tide really does tend to lift all boats. Like a lot of times what happened with the Chiefs down the stretch, their defense had always really improved. This year they didn't need to improve since it was a lead from the opening snap. But like the Lions defense is like never got better this year. And like it's still, I mean, it's not like it's bad, but the Lions defense is still a pretty major liability.
Oh, it's a huge liability. The Bucs were doing whatever they wanted in the second half. And that's what I mean. Purdy, Ayuk, Debo, Kittle, these guys are going to eat Lions alive. Okay. Like the Lions really, I think that their best chance here is to just like muck up the game, just make it a dirty game. They we'll get to in the preview show, whatever, but they can run it against this team. Okay. Yeah, like we saw Aaron Jones. I mentioned this in my piece from last week. Like the Niners rush defense is kind of bad because all they have are pass rushers who had their ears pinned back trying to get to the quarterback. And they are not there to read all that. They're not reading all that. Okay. If it's a running play, they're okay. Well, you linebackers, come on up. Get him. Come get him.
This might be the classic game where if Jared Goff reaches 30 pass attempts, like it's over. Like like a winning Lions stat line in this game is like 24 pass attempts for Jared Goff.
That sounds right.
We'll get to a lot more of that on Thursday, though. Kyle, do the Packers, do you think they arrived like I feel like the Packers might be the classic. You know, they arrived ahead of schedule, but it doesn't necessarily mean then they'll just be great next year. Like sometimes teams arrive ahead of schedule and then they still have one more year of growing pains where they fully arrive. Do you think the Packers, though, do you think they're ready to like arrive for real in 2024?
Yeah, I mean, outside of one, obviously there are other plays, but you know, we'll all remember the one play for Jordan Love. But I mean, outside of one play, or include it, like honestly, you include it, and his numbers over the second half of the season plus the playoffs are going to paint the picture correctly. If you watch him play, the numbers will accurately describe what happened of a quarterback who truly took the next step. And I do think, as far as, you know, we talk about the fragility of teams, this is a team that outside of like the variance of a quarterback entering his second season as a starter, in which the first was okay and then great, like there's still some sort of ambiguity. Outside of that, they are very anti-fragile in the fact that they run four receivers deep, two tight ends deep, and assuming Aaron Jones is still around, his contract makes that, you know, speculative, but let's just assume he is for this purpose, at least one receiver deep or one running back deep, a really good running back. They can afford to lose a receiver, like every team loses a receiver at some point for just stretches of games or for the entire season. They will continue to outclass their opponent's corners, their opponent's coverage linebackers throughout the season, almost no matter what happens. And I think it's a big advantage for a quarterback like Jordan Love.
Yeah, the only concern I might have is I just like double checked this. Over Jordan Love's final 12 games, he only threw 5 interceptions. Like that just feels like running the way he plays.
I know.
Feels like unsustainably hot to me. And I just wonder if he could like start off next year, like regressing to the mean in the turnover department. And kind of like, well, maybe we crowned him too early, blah, 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 and all that. He does not feel like a 5 interceptions in 12 games starter. I don't know if that's really ever going to be the real Jordan Love.
I don't know, man. I feel like you're selling him short.
I know. He looks like he's a superstar. I think I'm comfortable to say he's a superstar.
Yeah, it's like he throws these tight window throws where a quarterback who, like coming in this year, we just didn't know what we had. Like I was skeptical we had much with Jordan Love. And you see him throw throws that are inches from the tips of a defender.
I was going to say, he does that more than anyone I've ever seen. The ball is 1 inch.
I know. And you think like he can't keep getting away with it. But there are guys who are that precise. Like Mahomes has that level of accuracy, like especially over the middle of the field where you would say like, Kelce was not open. He had a linebacker underneath. He had a safety coming over top, and he found the window that was 8 inches wide, and he got it in there. Obviously, I'm not saying Jordan Love is Mahomes in that way, but we see players who can consistently thread the needle perfectly. And it was only 10-ish games, about, you know, 10 games or so. But like over the second half of the season, he did it time and time and time again. He could be that guy. I don't know if he is, but watching 10 or so games, I'm like, every time he just keeps threading the needle perfectly. And some guys can do that. And he might be that guy because he was doing it for a long time.
I think back to when Love came in for Aaron Rodgers on a Sunday night game against the Eagles, and it was a blowout, and he only played in the fourth quarter. But he's throwing balls where I'm like, hold up, like, who's this guy?
Like, well, Denny, I kept making fun of you too for like, man, Denny really loved this one half a play he saw from Jordan Love against the Eagles. And turns out it was quite predictable.
I mean, I was blown away. I was like, so you're telling me that this guy is Mahomes? This is what you're telling me? Like no one moves like this. Like, like that quickness and like that release, my goodness.
Yeah, off platform throws. Oh. Like he feels like he can make any throw. And I do think like he has a chance to develop his deep ball where like, I don't know how much we've seen of that. It's been more of the immaculate like timing.
His arm is not amazing. It's not bad, but I feel like his arm is not.
Well, it's not Josh Allen.
Yeah. I mean, he was like an arms guy coming out of college though, and had like good velocity and stuff. We haven't seen a ton of that, but also I think if we're saying like he's an okay deep ball thrower and he's got immaculate precision short to intermediate, the room for growth there is very obvious.
Yeah. So Jordan Love though, the thing I feel like about Jordan Love too, is like, we're not going to compare him to Patrick Mahomes. I feel like you can't compare him. I feel like he's his own archetype already. Like where there's no one who plays quarterback quite the way he does.
I mean, I would say he looks like Rodgers.
He doesn't set his feet. Like literally, Rodgers didn't set his feet a lot too.
No. He didn't set it. And I know that's a lazy comparison. I know it's lazy because Rodgers played for the Packers. So you're just saying anybody in a Packers uniform plays like plays like Rodgers. No, I'm just saying that
Sean Clifford does not.
Love happens to look to me. If you zoom out far enough, you go, oh, right. That's Aaron Rodgers throwing to Jordy Nelson in 2011. Like that's how it looks.
He doesn't have the arm. He doesn't have the arm. And Rodgers, too.
Rodgers has a special arm.
Rodgers became like pretty conservative at the end, you know, where his whole game was like, I'm not throwing a pick. You think I'm
I mean,
I mean, that was one of the big criticisms in the slump before his MVP, his back-to-back MVPs, right? Was that, like, if there wasn't a guy there, like, he kind of stopped taking some of the tight window throws and was just throw it away. And, like, enough throwaways, like, those kind of start to look like sacks. Like, it's a lost play. You don't lose yards on it, but you do lose the play. And that was, you know, kind of a feature of the pre- second MVP and third.
I'm fascinated by he looks downfield and like he's trying to be efficient by hitting big plays and not just dinking and dunking all day.
Can I tell you real quick how quarterback friendly the Shanahan system is? Okay.
Yeah, please.
Okay. We all watched the Packers Niners. We also Brock Purdy doing that thing where he draws back in a clean pocket and tries to throw pick after pick after pick.
We all saw that, correct?
Yes.
We saw Jordan Love play a good game besides his back-breaking, unbelievably
season-ending interception.
Okay, we all saw that, right? And who would you say played better? I think every single person would say, well, Jordan Love obviously outplayed Brock Purdy, okay? Well, folks, Brock Purdy had a much higher EPA per dropback than Jordan Love. So that's just this system is just works wonders for quarterbacks, which is I think a legit knock against Purdy. It just is like he's doing what he needs to do. But I'm telling you, there are 15 starting quarterbacks in the NFL who would be better in this system than Purdy.
Yeah, Shanny's always got the EPA down real bad, and then I'm gonna get the EPA down bad when I throw my computer away. Illegally and dump it and have the battery leak. And when it tells me that Brock Purdy is the best quarterback in the NFL, see what I did there? Two different EPAs.
EPA, Environmental Protection Agency.
I get so mad at the computer EPA that I illegally dump my computer and then it becomes an environmental hazard.
EPA.
Of course, all the lithium.
I'm just leaking all this lithium into the Missouri River.
And, which is actually legal, I think.
Yeah, no, it actually is legal in this state. But
they encourage it, in fact. They want a little bit of lithium for flavor.
And actually, we would really, really like the EPA to come in and clean up the Westlake landfill. If you're listening, EPA, this is not a joke. I'm dead serious. The EPA's got to come in and finally fix the disaster at the Westlake landfill. We'll have to fix the disaster as this podcast if we don't move on. To the Ravens, 34-10 over the Texans. This game was tied at halftime. Then the Ravens, I thought it was happening again, man. Like John Harbaugh, like talking about a man who loves not to lose playoff games.
Yeah, man.
But the Ravens went total bulldozer mode in the second half. Do you guys think they exercised their playoff demons? Was it a convincing enough second half for you?
Yes, it was. I do think that they exercised those demons. I was a little bit, I don't know, put off by the fact that they didn't really let Lamar cook in the passing game at all. That could have had to do with the weather because
it was
just
poor.
Anecdotally, look, I live about 25 miles south of Baltimore. It was nasty outside. It was like gusts of like 35 miles an hour. So it was not ideal for passing. Maybe that will come with better conditions or whatever into the postseason. I guess they're going to play in Baltimore next week, so that won't happen there. But Lamar was really good as a passer, 11.4% over his expected completion rate, highest EPA of any quarterback on the week. So, I mean, he just, you know, like ran roughshod over these guys. I don't know. The passing game left me a little cold.
It did. I mean, there were almost no big plays, no, quote, explosives. As every film watcher now insists on calling them.
Yeah.
And I really, man, we got, I feel like that nomenclature is just, I'm not a fan.
It's not my favorite. I didn't like when you said it. So
that's I know. It's very off-putting. We need a different word for 20 plus yard plays. Or is it 15? I don't even know how they define an explosive. I've always defined a big play as 20 plus.
But I just look at it like if it doesn't look like a big play, it's not a true big play.
I wasn't totally sold. I'll say that. I think the Chiefs are going to win. I just don't see. When Patrick Mahomes plays, my prediction is the team of Patrick Mahomes is going to win.
It's a good rule of thumb. He is, you know, we started the show with like comparing him to Brady. And I think all of us, I didn't voice my opinion, but I think all of us were like, in this specific regard, he's got the edge over the best quarterback of all time by a country mile. Like, if you bet on the team with Mahomes, you're so often going to be right. So this is a good heuristic to have.
I will say, though, the Ravens, I mean, they're the real deal on both sides of the ball. And they're going to be favored. They're going to be probably, I think the early line's like 3.5 or something.
I think I saw that too. I think you're right.
This defense is designed to shut down the KC offense. I like the Ravens.
But I mean, it's, as you said, though, I mean, Pat Mahomes is fine playing the game on your terms because no one executes better than him. It doesn't really matter what your game plan is. Like he'll execute against it.
He's so versatile. Like the thing you're trying to stop, like, oh, we can't keep giving Pat Mahomes the free layups to Rashee Rice over the middle of the field. Like, oh, then you've committed a lot of resources. He scrambles, dives, and throws a 40-yarder to MBS. All that needs to happen is for this guy to catch it. But, like, there is no way in which you can channel Mahomes into a style of play that he does not succeed at, because he succeeds at every style of play.
Denny hit an important point at the Ravens. They're gonna have to be more out of the Ravens passing game. There's just going to need to be a lot more out of the Ravens passing game. They're not going to win if they don't hit some big plays in the passing game. I think I do feel confident saying that.
Yeah, I actually do think this game will be low scoring. That's just my.
This is 2017, 22-17 waiting to happen. I totally agree.
That sounds about right. I don't know. The Ravens have been really tough, like against the middle of the field and tight ends this year, always really. So maybe that takes away Kelsey. I mean, once you take away Kelsey, you have Rashee Rice, who is going to be matching up against some tough corners. I mean, I don't know. I don't know, Jim. I don't like this matchup for the Chiefs, Jim.
It will be Jim on the call. Jim and Tony on the call next Sunday. Unfortunately, NBC, we've broadcast our last game of the year. Very sad.
Oh, well, that means
we can go back and watch some other ones, though.
Yeah, we will. We'll revisit. I'm going to rewatch the game from today, Lions-Bucks. I'm just going to watch it. Instead of the AFC Championship game, I'm going to rewatch Lions-Bucks next Sunday night. You guys, while everyone else is out there, you know, watching the AFC Championship game, I'm rewatching Baker Mayfield versus Jared Goff. We are not the same.
We are not the same. I am going to lose my mind if Dalvin Cook becomes a thing. Like if they make Dalvin Cook a thing because he had one good run against
the. He was all closeout. I mean, it was the fourth quarter, but that's the problem. Like Gus Edwards didn't really have anything left to give. And now
but Justice Hill is their best running back.
Yeah.
Like by far.
By far.
I don't understand what the problem. What is the problem, John Harbaugh, Todd Monken? Why do you not just phase out Gus except for the green zone, whatever? Get him in there, big Gus bus running through guy, whatever. but Justice Hill, you know, he gets way more than is blocked, and you cannot say that for any other Ravens back.
I would venture to say Gus is not good.
He's a good goal line back. Like he's a legit hammer from 2 yards out, and that's about it though.
Yeah, I would say he's not good. I'm sitting at home in an office chair. I was given a lumbar pillow for Christmas, but I would actually say he's not good.
Also, could we get something out of Odell Beckham? Just something.
Yeah, man. Sounds personal.
I know. It's not personal. It's just, I mean, I'm just amazed that, like, you know, we've been saying for 10, 12 weeks, oh, they're saving him. They're saving him up. Just wait. They're going to unleash him in the playoffs. He's the guy's nowhere. I mean, you don't even remember he's in the game.
They're saving him up to drop a screen touchdown this week. Yeah, it would have been an 80-yard touchdown. Oh, but he dry it off his fingers. And I'm trying to nail the Romo.
You did.
That was good.
Very good. And, I mean, we didn't talk about the Texans. I mean, CJ Stroud's a problem, things of that nature. Guy's a superstar.
Bobby Slowik did the thing that Kyle and I warned about. Okay, obviously PFF Bobby's not listening to the Roto World Football Show for some reason because he went ahead and he was 6% under their expected pass rate on first down. Bobby,
I'm not sure.
What are you doing, man?
Bobby guy, man. I don't know.
You drop back. You just drop back and let your guy cook. You don't pin your whole season on Devin Singletary.
I feel like PFF Bobby had like one good game, and it was the wild card. Like week 18, everyone was complaining about PFF Bobby. Like, wow, they're really trying to lose this game.
Yes. No. Listen, I think for as much as I appreciate PFF Bobby, I think CJ Stroud made Nico Collins. He made Tank Dell. He made Bobby Slowick. Like, he's doing the making.
Exactly. Okay? That's what drove me so insane with the Nico Collins, like the weapons debate with Bryce and CJ Stroud. Like, dude, like Nico Collins was like a plumber in the first 2 years.
We wouldn't even know who Nico Collins was if he was on the Panthers. Don't give me this, like, well, if you give Nico Collins to what's his name, Bryce Young, please.
Well, to be fair, we'd be considering him for UFL DFS week one.
We would be.
Get out of town. Nico Collins is very good. And my defense of PFF Bobby will say a lot of it probably to D'Amico Ryan's. Like, we got to run. We can't cut it loose, but
maybe
you need to cut the young man loose next year. And like he did cut it loose. Like in a big moment, he would just say, all right, whatever, I'm going to make a big play now. And then he would do it.
And I mean, they had stretches of games. Like, it was before the really bad Stroud concussion. They did start to cut Stroud.
That is true. The concussion.
They started to turn it up. Yeah, but they, that's true. Coming back after the concussion, they were a little bit in between. Like, they weren't.
We came back and Tank Dell had gone down too.
Yeah, but like, you still had Devin Singletary as your top back. I get that, like, if you come back to a team that, like, say this team had, you know, Jonathan Taylor's cooking them or whatever, you're like, we lost our top receiver. Stroud's coming back from a concussion. We think we have a good matchup in the ground game. But, like, for Christ's sake, man, Devin Singletary is your top running back, and you have, for my money, the best rookie ever. So
he's the best since at least Justin Herbert, probably since Cam Newton. I was actually looking through the roles yesterday.
Yeah, it's, you know, for my money, if you want to say Cam Newton, I also have no qualms with that. And I'm also fine with Justin Herbert, but, like, it's a 3 to maybe 4 player race there for quarterbacks, at least. What are you doing with this Devin Singletary crap?
I don't know. Yeah. So we'll see. But like the Texans, Schultz is free agent. Bob Woods is actually guaranteed some money, but they're going to cut him. I'm almost positive. Noah Brown is a free agent. Nico Khan's contract year. So
if you're a religious person, you can pray for a Brevin Jordan breakout season.
Yeah, it's not happening. He's had one catch over 30 yards, and it happened to come.
I've never been more mad about anything in my life.
What happened to Jim Schwartz and that defense, man? That was crazy.
I mean, Jim Schwartz was ready to not be in Cleveland.
He thought he had punched his ticket back to head coaching.
Yeah.
And then he got annihilated in the biggest game.
Humiliated.
Yeah, he did. I don't think he's even gotten an interview. I don't think he has.
I haven't seen any interviews come through.
Jim Schwartz is never going to be a head coach.
get ready to speak Cleveland again, buddy. Ohio native Kyle Dvorak, for Denny Carter, I am Patrick Daugherty. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back on Tuesday with Denny. And then Kyle, Denny, and I will all be back on Thursday to break down the championship weekend. So keep it locked to rotoworld.com. A lot of coaching news, a lot of injury news. We'll be back later.
At Vanguard, you're more than just an investor. You're an owner. That means your priorities are Vanguard's too. So whether you're planning for retirement or trying to save up for your next big adventure, Vanguard will work alongside you to set personalized investment goals. That's the value of ownership. All investing is subject to risk. Vanguard is owned by its funds, which are owned by Vanguard's fund shareholder clients. Vanguard Marketing Corporation Distributor.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.